coaches are very highly respected, highly regarded because they help other people win. But what are the characteristics of a great coach? What are the characteristics that endear us to them, cause us to respect them? We are going to explore all of that in what is the last episode of the Coach Builder Limited series. Been so thankful that you've been hanging out with us this long. You're going to love today's episode because it's all about step 8, mastering the soft skills of a great coach. With that, welcome to Coach Builder, a Business Made Simple podcast limited series teaching you exactly how to turn your skills and expertise into a successful coaching business. All of this is based on my new book, Coach Builder. It is out now. You can go get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you buy books. I am your host, Donald Miller. Bobby, I've got a question for you. It has to do with today's episode, which, by the way, is the final episode of the Coach Builder Limited series.
This is the final time you say, Bobby, I have a question for you.
We're talking about step 8, which is master the soft skills of coaching. So Coach Builder is the book you go to if you're thinking about starting a coaching business or if you want to grow your existing coaching business. And there are 8 steps. Step 8 is master the soft skills of coaching. What really a soft skill is your ability to connect and to earn trust and to add value. So connect means somebody likes you and you feel a kinship with them. Earn trust means I'm willing basically to be vulnerable with you. And add value means what that person just said to me is going to relieve stress or make me money or something along those lines. I think that's why the soft skills are important. But who is somebody in your life that you connected with and added value to you? And who were they? Where were you? What was going on? And what did they do to do that? I'm just curious.
A couple of people come to mind. It's interesting because one of them's already kind of baked into my life. I had no choice. It's my dad, you know?
Yeah. Like I'm curious about that, though. What did he do?
But a lot of times the relationship doesn't turn into that. You know what I mean?
Right. I would say for probably more than half the guys, their relationship with their dad is, they wouldn't say that. They might love their dad, but they wouldn't say that my dad is like a confidant.
Oh, sure. I mean, my dad was my best man at my wedding. He's the guy that I call when I'm trying to figure stuff out, like just on all fronts. He just was always somebody who would jump into the deep end, not necessarily knowing what to expect or didn't quite know what he was doing, and he'd figure it out. And it would be through just, you know, listening. It would be through asking people questions, saying that he didn't know and figuring it out, leaning into communities, a lot of different groups that he was part of in the world that he was in. And he was in country music radio forever, still is. And it just all came from relationships. And a lot of the things that we talked about in the episodes and all the steps in Coach Builder, you know, within this limited series. I think just seeing all that and then seeing how intentional he was, and I was very much an artist, impulsive, Enneagram 7.
Yeah.
You know, going, well, this isn't fun anymore. I'm done. Next. You know, I mean, just that kind of thing. And sometimes feeling very frustrated. I wasn't moving forward. I wasn't getting done what I wanted. And I think that seeing that helped give me a framework, or his empathy and sort of going, hey, I know how that feels. However, if you do this, this, and this, you'll see results. I don't know. Does that answer the question?
I literally have been writing down what I would consider adjectives that describe your dad based on what you've said. Can I go through them?
We'll just see.
Because these are all the sort of characteristics that we want to develop. If you want your son to talk about you the way Bobby just talked about his dad, or if you want your clients to talk about you. Okay. So one I wrote down, which was sort of in the subtext, was he was accessible. He wasn't like daydreaming when you were around.
No, very focused.
He was engaged.
Yeah, very engaged. Oh yeah, with me, and also just with, I feel like on all fronts, with my mom, still is, yeah.
Sounds like he was a good listener.
Very much, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I'm getting all choked up here talking about your dad.
And I know he listens to the show. He listens to the show too.
I'm
interested to see what he thinks.
Empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
How would he express empathy to you?
I think as I got older, because I think he wanted to do things his own way and wouldn't necessarily see eye to eye with my grandma, who I was so close with, and also very much, you know, I loved her. She was like a second mom. But sometimes they'd have a little bit, you know, where they'd be butt heads.
Sure.
And so when he would see that in me, he would name, hey, I get it. I've been there. I know.
Wow.
Yeah. And sometimes I'd listen, sometimes I wouldn't. You know, sometimes I'd go like, you don't get me, you know, like when I was younger.
Yeah, but a lot of us as parents, when we see a negative characteristic of ourselves in our children, we get triggered by it.
Sure.
Instead of going, hey, there's no excuse for that, but let me also tell you where you got it. You know, you got it from me, and here's my struggle with that. Here's how I'm trying not to do that anymore. And maybe we're on a journey together trying to be better humans. That's a whole different mentality than like you trying to fix yourself through time traveling back in time and berating yourself, your kid, the way you should have berated yourself. It's crazy. I got the adjective helpful, that his advice was good.
Oh, it still is, yeah.
Honest and vulnerable. You actually use the word intentional.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
What does that mean?
You know what? He and you, Don, both live in that same world.
Really? Oh, that feels good.
Well, just because, I mean, think about all the stuff that you lay out with Hero on a Mission. Think about everything that you're laying out here. This whole book is just step by step of intentionality. It's being intentional with every single step so that, you know, it's clear. There's no confusion. And I think that that was something that I saw with him, where he's going, you know what? This is the goal I want to achieve. Let me work backwards through the steps. And then I know exactly what I need to do right now to just even take that baby step to get into that next level, to that next rung.
Well, I love it. I put intentional and competent kind of rounded out my list. I felt like I could have kept going. But the reason I did this exercise, Bobby, is because one of the things that I did in terms of improving my soft skills, because I have an insecurity about soft skills. You know, I'm the guy who, this just happened in the conference room the other day. We were having a meeting and I got the information that I needed. You know, it was like six people around the table. I got the information that I needed. And I literally stood up and said, okay, it was great meeting with you guys.
I'm done.
And everybody in the room is looking at me like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, sorry. I sat back down. I guess we're going to keep meeting. Soft skills are sometimes not my strong suit.
I think that's my go-to mode, but I know that about myself. So I try to be aware of that and going like, well, I got everything I need. So do we have to, why are we still here?
So when I wrote this chapter, I thought, man, I'm going to start creating a master list of what I see. Like whenever you really like somebody or you connect with somebody or somebody's helpful, there's a reason. It's not them. It's they are doing something that is making you feel that way. And if we can sort of pause the tape and go, what are they doing? You know, they're listening or they're encouraging or the opposite. Like somebody does something and it's like, that's really rubbing me wrong. And what are they doing? And kind of make a list of do's and don'ts. By osmosis, I would think we would get better. Can I read you like the list that I share in the book?
Yeah, do it.
The first actually from a coach's perspective is they're the guide, not the hero.
Right.
So if you read Building a Story Brand, you know, or Hero on a Mission for that matter, you know the difference between a guide and a hero. A hero, the story is about the hero. They are trying to overcome a challenge in order to accomplish something really great. And then there's this other character in the story called the guide. Like Gandalf is a guide. Haymitch is a guide.
Mr. Miyagi.
Professor Dumbledore. Yeah.
Yoda.
Mr. Miyagi. Yoda. Mary Poppins is a guide. The guide is the character who's the strongest character in the movie or the story, has already conquered whatever the hero is dealing with in their past story, in their past life. And now is just giving the hero advice on how to move forward. And whenever you go into a coaching session, you don't want to think of yourself as a friend or a companion. You want to literally think of yourself as a guide. Now, guides and heroes have incredibly close, intimate relationships. The difference is they're not equals. The guide is actually more competent than the hero. And so the two characteristics of a guide that make a guide work are empathy. They understand the hero's pain and competency. They know how to help this hero get out of a hole. So if you study like the characteristics of a guide, that's who you need to be. You know, we all play hero. We all play victim. We all play villain. We all play guide. In your coaching relationship with a client, it is imperative that you only play the guide. I had a buddy who said to me, his dad actually said to him once when he was like 13 years old, he sat him down and he said, hey, I've gotten you this far. From now on, we're equals and we're just going to be friends.
Oh gosh.
It scarred him. I mean, this is like, he's like 35 and he's like telling me this.
I was going
to
say.
Because he's like, I need you to be my guide. What are you talking about? Am I on my own? Like, you can't really help me out any further than this. This is scarring. So that's the characteristic number one, is you play the guide, you don't play the hero. Meaning the story is about them, but you are the person who's going to help them figure out how to win. And it's your job.
Yeah.
And as a coach, that's your job. And then I made a list of 10 characteristics. I'm going to give you six of them because 7, 8, 9, and 10 are unfreaking believable, but you have to buy the book.
You whet the appetite. Go to coachbuilder.com/podcast.
Yeah. Plus, yeah. We're halfway through this episode and we haven't even talked about anything yet. Never assume you know the client's problem. This is a characteristic that I realized I like. When somebody says to me, okay, I hear you saying this, is that kind of describe the challenge that you have? And even if they didn't get it right, I love that because I go, not exactly. It's this. And when somebody does that with me, it just feels, it feels like I'm being listened to, I'm being cared for. If I say, you know, I just like keep having sugar cravings at night, you need to take these vitamins and blah, 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 rather than, okay, walk me through that. Right? You know, just give me some pat answer without listening.
It's not a cutting you off going, oh, Don, I know exactly. I know exactly what's wrong. Well, I don't think you do.
There's an assumption on the part of the person that I have a lot of respect for that they don't understand. And they want to cover every blind spot so they fully can get inside of my psyche and know what I'm dealing with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right, then the second one is very much like it. Never assume your client understood your coaching. Don't think they got it. Because I like it when my coach says, okay, can we just sum up? Here's what you're going to do based on our conversation. And then they'll almost ask me to repeat it back to them. I'm just like, okay, well, whenever I think about this, I'm going to realize that's none of my business. And it's hijacking me from my focus of what I said I was going to try to focus on. Like, exactly, Don, great. You understood my coaching. I love that.
Right, right.
So yeah, never assume your client understood your coaching. Just spell it out. Here, this is a big one. Number three, never break a client's trust. That's confidentiality.
Like example wise, what would be?
You know, there's just been things that have happened in my relationships with, you know, I've had a ton of coaches, ton of mentors. There's been a couple where, because of what I do for a living, I've kind of turned around and thought, hey, I think you just stole my idea.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or I think you just used me to get to that person or something like that, that, you know, could be in my head. I never said anything or got upset about it.
Sure,
but I
sure.
definitely kind of went, I don't know that I'm going to be open with you as much as I used to.
Got it.
And I would say, like, as a coach, you got to stay 1,000 feet away from that. And by the way, if there's a conflict of interest with a client, get out. I mean, you literally just have to say, hey, you know, we kind of do similar stuff here. And, you know, I'm afraid that if we meet and I do something and you're going to kind of feel like, wait a second, are we competition or are we coaching? And so I think we can just stay really good friends. But I'm not going to take you on as a client. Because what I did was I sort of like didn't get mad or anything.
Yeah.
But I just said, okay, I think we're kind of through.
Right.
And kind of walked away.
And think about this too. When you were saying that story about if the coach is the one that says, hey, feels like, you know what, maybe we're in a space where, yeah, maybe we are in kind of competition. This is a conflict of interest. Think about, there's an awkward moment there because it is like a breakup. But think about the respect and the bridge that is not burned.
Right.
Between you and that client that's no longer your client, or that you're sort of, you know, saying, hey, this isn't going to work out, versus going, well, you know, it's more money toward my bottom line. So, yeah, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Well, then the worst happens. And like you're saying, you're feeling kind of smarmy, like they were kind of smarmy using you.
A little bit. And to me, I kind of distance myself a little bit from that situation in order to preserve the relationship.
Right.
There's something about, there's a coach-client relationship that is maternal and paternal in nature.
Is it?
You know, it's unavoidable that you're seeing this person as a father figure or as a mother figure, and you want them to kind of level up in their integrity a bit. You want that. And it, number four is, we already kind of talked about it with the guide hero stuff, is never make the story about you.
Mm, yeah.
You know, that's a tough one for us, especially those of us who like self-reflect. This is actually a tough one for me.
I'm guilty of that.
I self-reflect a lot. And I write, you know, I've written memoirs. So I'm always going to go, well, here's how that played out in my life. And I'll do that. But I have to kind of keep a check on that because I think it might rub people the wrong way. What's interesting is you can do that on stage. But if you're actually in a coaching conversation, it doesn't translate as well.
I was going to say, I feel like, are there places where that is valuable? Or where
in a book,
that can
in
be,
a book, on stage.
Yeah.
But if somebody's paying you like, you know, $500 for an hour of your time.
Unless maybe they ask, you know, say, well, Don, did this ever happen to you? that's almost like permission to, then you're following their lead with that.
That's right. And, you know, this is like no big deal. It just, there's something that kind of doesn't sit right when it's happening. Sure. You know, it's not like that's a, this person has no character. It's like, that just kind of doesn't sit right.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've noticed that. And I, you know, and I also do that. So I need to not do that. Here's a big one. Number five, be accountable to help the client find a win. I think a good coach makes sure that you get across the finish line on something. Yeah. That somehow you get the ball in the end zone. For me, a lot of that is at the end of a coaching session. I'll do this in my strategy sessions. We've spent 6 to 8 hours together. And I'll say, okay, how long would it have taken you to get this work done if we wouldn't have met today? And it's never not been less than years. In other words, we got years done in 8 hours. And I think I say that to help the client sort of psychologically understand that today was a big win. And then we actually list the wins. You know, what did we get done? How's that going to move the needle in your business? And I'll get a blank sheet of butcher paper or the whiteboard, and we list them out. And to me, that's two things. It's me identifying what the wins were so that I know we got some wins, and also letting them know. Because let's say we like didn't talk about email strategy and we talked about 23 other things that's going to make them millions of dollars. They'll go home going, we didn't talk about email
strategy. Exactly. Remember the one thing. Exactly.
We'll end with this one, Bobby, because we're running out of time. But demand engagement as part of the price of your coaching.
If it's from like a trainer perspective, you know, you were talking about working with a trainer last episode. It's like going, well, the trainer could tell you all the things that these weights can do, how it'll affect us, how it'll do it. But if you're not in there lifting the weights.
Yeah. It really bothers me when I do a strategy session with somebody or they pay me a bunch of money and I help them with their marketing and messaging and that sort of stuff. It bothers me if they don't execute, because what it makes me feel like, it's, you know, what it personally makes me feel like is that what you have said to me is I'm only in it for the money, and I'm not in it for the money. I'm in it for you to get a win. That's where I get my satisfaction. But when I give you all this stuff and you don't do it or you don't execute on it, it makes me feel like, okay, well, at least I got paid, which makes me feel dirty.
Sure. It's just transactional.
Yeah, it's transactional. Yeah. Instead of like, no, man, you paid me to get you across the finish line. You didn't pay me to talk, right? You paid me to give you a plan and a strategy, but then you didn't do it. I want you to engage more than that. And the other thing is like, I could help somebody else win today.
True. Yeah. It's like wasted potential. You're like, hey, there's somebody else out there that's hungry, that wants to be more,
yeah, man.
That wants to make a difference and help other people solve their problems and help other people's lives get better.
I mean, I would imagine like if you're a trainer working with a young athlete who's just lazy, it's so uncomfortable because you would just feel like you're not a trainer today. You're a babysitter.
Yeah. Now, I have a question, Don. How clear are you when you're talking with a client and kind of saying that? Not like berating or not like almost like trying to scare them and go, hey, you know what? My goal here isn't just to take your money. My goal here is to get you to the finish line. It's to make sure that you take action. It's to be behind you when it's hard.
Well, I'm pretty clear, but I don't do it in any kind of way that's accusational, because I don't feel that way about the client.
Sure.
I'm not going to make this client pay for the sins of some previous client.
Right.
But it actually doesn't happen anymore, because I won't take a client who I think is going to do that. So that weeds out a lot of folks.
There you go. Okay.
I only take clients who realize, okay, what we're going to come away with is an action plan, but nothing happens unless you act on that action plan. And then in the course of this coaching session, I will talk about, and I use the metaphor a lot, you've heard me say it a million times, we've got to get the ball in the end zone.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about what it means to get the ball in the end zone. And we actually spell out an action plan on what they can do. And then I say, listen, you've paid me a lot of money for this session. I want you to know, and I want you to be brutally honest with me, because I want to be a really good coach. I will write you a check for whatever you paid me if you do not get a 10x return on your investment. So if you pay me 10 grand, I fully expect that you would make $100,000 off of what we outlined today. Truth is, I would think you're going to make a million or more. However, I'm not going to write you the check if you didn't execute on this list. So what that says to them is like, I 100% believe that what we came up with today is going to work. And if it doesn't, I am going to write you a check. And I even say, look, I'm not going to write you a check because I'm generous or because I care about you. I'm going to write you a check because I don't want anybody saying that I wasted their money. And if I write you the check back, then I was not a bad investment.
Yeah.
Right? If you write me a check and you do what I say and it doesn't work, I am a bad investment. But if it doesn't work and I give you the money back, well, how am I a bad investment?
Then you zero out. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Saving my own bacon. And then, you know, that's my way of kind of making it feel like, okay, it's on you, right? If you don't execute on this plan, it's not on me. It's not my advice. You didn't do it. So I'm not writing you a check. I'm going to keep the money. That works.
Yeah.
I mean, that gets people off the dime.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gets them to do it.
Well, and then you keep making them more money.
Yeah. In the book, Bobby, there's a list of 10 characteristics that I came up with, but I also give you instructions and a tool, an online tool to create your own rules of coaching. I really think every coach needs to have their own personal rules of coaching. These are kind of the values that you believe in, the core values. And what that's going to do is sort of shape your coaching personality and your coaching integrity. One of the things that is in my, what I'm trying to do right now with myself is not speak so quickly, like even in a casual conversation, not say something, but instead, like if I have that little tinge of like, don't say that, you know, that joke's not very funny, just to count to five.
Really?
You know, literally, it's just like, all I'm going to do is, I'm going to count to five and then I'm going to say it.
I need to practice
that. The truth is, by the time I get to, you know, by the time we get to five, Bobby, we're not going to say it.
The fact that you needed to count to five should be the immediate shutdown for whatever you were about to say.
And the thing, it had to do with a prayer of kind of developing more respect in the area of competency. Because I think when you're a coach or when you're an author and you do a podcast or something like this, you just need to kind of watch a little bit what you say, not because people are going to judge you. They may judge you, but that doesn't matter. But because it's going to cost you credibility. Your whole world, everybody listen to me, your entire world has been built by your words. Everything that you had, your marriage was created by the things that you said to a woman or to a man.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. Your child's, yeah, your whole, everything, the job that you have was created by the words that you spoke in an interview. And the fact that that dude doesn't like you, it might be a little bit of issues on him, probably something that you said. Isn't that amazing?
You just blew my mind. Because I don't think I've ever thought of it like that before.
Yeah, words build worlds.
You think choices, you think actions, and in that, the root of it all is the words.
Words are the root of actions.
Yeah.
Words are the root of actions. You know, we think about the ingredients going into our bodies as we, you know, as we eat food. No, I don't think about it enough, but I do sometimes give it like a, maybe I need to count to five before
count
I
count to five before, yeah. I'll count to five before I totally dust off that bag of chips.
Yeah. But in the book, in chapter or step eight of the book, I talk about having you're creating your own rules of coaching. And it's basically your personal rules for how you will conduct yourself. And I think over the years that you spend as a coach, you add to that list. And they've got to be metabolized and internalized and then put into action. But if you want to be an incredibly respected coach 10 years from now, you can't wing it. You got to actually go, well, here's what I do and here's what I don't do. And if you have, here's what I do and here's what I don't do. Think about like Jordan Peterson. I realize he's somewhat of a controversial character. I happen to have a lot of respect for his intellect. I don't appreciate the fact that he often can't see things from the other person's perspective.
Sure, sure.
But you know, what's his best-selling book called? 12 Rules for Life, right? So he actually sat down and went, what are my personal rules? For me as a human being, I think that's incredibly healthy, you know, and maybe we all need to do that.
Well, with all this culminating over these last nine episodes, and then today about these soft skills, what would you say is our plan of action for today's episode? Sort of the culmination.
One rule.
Yeah, that one rule?
One rule. Yeah. So right now, like, what's your first rule?
Oh, coming
your
up first, with the first rule, yeah, for the plan of action.
Your first rule of coaching. What is it?
That's great.
You know, I mean, you could borrow any of mine. You know, I never betray a client, or I count to five before I speak. That's a pretty good one. You know, one rule. And then I don't think you can come up with 10 and metabolize them all right away. I think you kind of add these one at a time. Like a year from now, you might have three, you know, and 2 years from now, you might have five. And then, but these are kind of the rules that I follow. Boundaries are helpful. There was a gal the other day, Henry Cloud and I were we're having dinner, and he had paid for the previous dinner, and so I was going to grab the check on this one. And he started arguing with me in front of the waitress, you know, and she kind of looked at him and jokingly said, well, I typically take the first credit card. And he handed me the credit card, and he's like, no, but, and I go, Henry, these are rules. These are her rules. And she like lit up and looked at me and goes, they're my rules. Like, what is he going to do? Yeah. The boundaries guy.
I was going to say, these are my boundaries. Yeah.
You got to let me pay.
Oh, man.
So, you know, I like the idea of rules are helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not like biblical canonized, you know, decrees from God, but they are rules that help us guide our life. So I think come up with your first rule is the plan of action for today's episode. And also, you've listened to 8 characteristics or 8 steps, I should say, that you can take to build your coaching business or pivot your career into coaching business. The book is called Coach Builder. You or anybody who is thinking about pivoting into a coaching or consulting career, or you already have a coaching career, I wrote this book to make you $100,000, to add $100,000 to your existing coaching business, or to make you the first $100,000 as fast as possible. That was the controlling idea when I sat down to write the book. So if you think about coaching, get the book Coach Builder. You want to join our community of coaches. We have the coaching community that we've created at Coach Builder is growing about 3 times faster than it was a year ago. And I'm ridiculously impressed with the caliber of talent of the coaches who are coming into our fold. And I mean, a little bit intimidated, man. Bobby, these guys are, I shouldn't say that, right? Because I'm supposed to be the guide and they're the hero. But
you're being vulnerable.
Yeah,
there you go.
That works. So you can find out more at coachbuilder.com. Grab the book on Amazon. If you buy the book, go to coachbuilderbook.com/podcast. And we've got some bonuses. One of them, by the way, Bobby, is 27 different websites. We've created a PDF of 27 real coaching websites of coaches who are making a lot of money and are very, very respected, so that you can kind of get an idea of what it looks like to market yourself as a coach. So that's free when you get the book. Just buy it on Amazon. Go to coachbuilderbook.com/podcast. All right, Bobby, this is a great series.
This is fantastic.
Yeah, thanks everybody for listening. Hopefully this has helped you either decide to become a coach or grow your coaching business. That's exactly what we want you to do. And you, by the way, have everything you need. These are the 8 steps. Spent about a year and a half thinking through these 8 steps. These are the ones that successful coaches take. So you've got what you need to grow a coaching business. Grab the book. Other than that, Bobby, I think we're signing off.
Let's sign off.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Business Made Simple podcast, the Coach Builder special edition of Business Made Simple. We are absolutely obsessed with helping you grow your coaching business. Hope to see you again soon.